this groomer.
I do groomer. Okay, I'm grooming groomer. You.
Yeah, you are grooming me.
I am grooming you.
You're grooming. I'll You're looking good that. Today, Leslie. How are you feeling, though?
I'm feeling mighty fine, thank you. How are you feeling?
I'm good. I'm worried about that heater over there.
What are you worried about?
I just don't want the background noise because it always messes with this microphone.
I don't think it's going to. It's way far away.
I don't like the audio as much as I want the
You're
audio.
You're an audio nerd.
I'm an audiophile.
Yeah. Are we on?
Yeah, we're on.
Oh my gosh. Hello. Nice to see you guys. Happy Sunday. Benjamin is an audio nerd, so he's messing with things, tweaking things.
One thing about this job is the most important thing about this job. Clear, clean audio. The most important thing before any of the lights and the cameras and the action. Okay. Clean audio. People cannot listen at length to crappy audio. They can't do it. So we need it clear, concise. And plus, what else is this show about? I mean, well, other than
it's about listening to you.
That's loaded.
Yeah. No, it's interesting that you say that. Someone posted on Twitter yesterday a video that I made over a year ago.
Oh, wow. They just like ripped it and reposted it.
No. They tagged me and everything. They reposted a video from my YouTube channel from one of my first ones. It's called Psychological Abuse in Counselor Training. And in it, I go over a couple of essays that I wrote in graduate school and the teacher's responses to those essays. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because one of the first things I noticed, I went and played it back. I hadn't watched it since then. And I played it back and the sound is horrible. So,
well, we should fix that.
No. I mean, it is what it is. It exists out there. And it was very, you know, this wasn't a podcast. This was just somebody making videos about something that happened. So it was more documenting something for other people to witness. Because I wanted to put it out there and show that this is really quite serious, what's happening in these programs.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So the audio quality is garbage, but it's still been seen a bunch.
You can fix that. I'm saying I can fix it.
You can fix it even in YouTube?
No, I'll download it and then you'll repost it. It's an archival document. We should have like great respect for these things.
Okay, maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
What did Antioch, which was the school that you went to get your master's in counseling degree, what did they change their name to? It's something that's vaguely Germanic.
No, it's just, it's very Marxist. It's the Coalition for the Greater Good.
The Coalition for the Greater Good.
It's, the universities are still called. They didn't change the names of the universities. They actually aligned with another university, another private school system. I don't remember which one. And together they formed the corporate body that's called the Coalition for the Greater Good.
That is terrible branding. I mean, it's just too many words.
It's just too many words. It's just social justice. Let me see if I can find it.
So I guess what separates them, like the Nazis from the communists, because if it was society for the, like the greater good is a communist kind of ideal. Right, yeah. It's for everybody.
It's utilitarianism.
It's the opposite of everyone. It's very exclusive. It's very monocultural.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Otterbein. I don't know that existed. University.
Can you say that like one of my French girls?
What?
Otterbein.
Otterbein.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Otterbein University and Antioch University have created the Coalition for the Common Good. Oh, common good. I was wrong.
That's even worse. It's not even greater. Like the greater good is it's aspirational, but the common good is equity.
Yeah. The first national higher education system of affiliated universities organized around a shared mission of educating students not only to advance their careers, but to promote our pluralistic democracy, social, racial, economic, and environmental justice, and the common good.
Yeah.
Yep.
We need to shift our mindset and work together as a sector to serve more students and create more opportunities, said Coomer Ford. Through collaboration rather than competition, Otterbein and Antioch University can bring transformational change to communities by providing affordable education to more students in more locations. That's great.
This is the quote that I thought was kind of creepy here. Higher education owes our nation more than career preparation. It requires that we educate students to be engaged global citizens and critical thinkers who are seekers of facts and truth, respectful of history, scholarly research, and science, and who are advocates for democracy, civil rights, human rights, and the rule of law, said Groves. Now, some of that actually sounds pretty good.
Yeah, but when the truth gets in the way of justice, or when justice gets in the way of the truth, you're going to have a, like a priority there, and we can guess which priority it's going to be.
There's the cat trying to get catnip.
I don't want to yell in the microphone.
Don't yell. It'll be fine. He'll figure it out. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, it's just interesting that they changed their name.
What was it like looking back on that time in your life?
Well, it wasn't really that long ago, so I'm not that distant from it. But watching that video again was interesting because I read this. It was this one particular course that I was in where it was the social justice training course. It was called Multicultural Perspectives, and it was just where we got our DEI training. I think it was just a DEI course disguised as a psychology course. So we had to do these journals throughout the semester. We were supposed to turn in a series of... He's trying to scare the cat away from the cabin.
No, I'm listening. Speak to the audience. Yeah. I'm listening.
Okay. I did. I told them he's trying to... Okay. So I had to do these series of journals throughout the course because it was going to be difficult. This is what they were telling you. This is going to be difficult work. This is going to be hard work, and it's going to be emotional for you. So we want you to write journals. Every week you have to turn in a journal for your teacher to read so that you could process all of the ways that you're feeling about this work.
Yeah.
And so this is already really insidious.
This is when I spoke with Zeev Van Fleet, I believe the first time, all education was Maoist education. And it was always about struggling each other and yourself. Mm-hmm. And always just like, you're doing the work. You're doing the work.
Yeah, and that's exactly what this was. And so when you kind of recognize this and you have a framework for understanding it that way, it makes a lot more sense why they were doing this. I didn't at the time understand that. I was kind of just walking into it going, what the heck? And I'm trying to engage in good faith. And so I shared two of the essays that I wrote during that for journals. They're short. They're just like one page long reflections on content of the course. And then I also shared the professor's responses to me, which were admonishments and telling me that I needed to recognize my privilege and just these sorts of...
You take to being spoken to like that very well.
Well, I was really respectful.
Oh.
I was really calm and I was... if you can watch this, it's a short video, and I read these. So maybe we can post it in the since we're talking about it, post a link.
Yeah.
But
with the fixed audio.
I see what you did there. Yeah, that's a good idea. If you want to do that.
I'm looking at the wrong camera. Wait, no, I am looking at the wrong camera.
Where's the camera? Oh, there. Okay. But so she accuses me of being unprofessional. She accuses me of using disrespectful language, and
you
can
language.
Yeah, you can read what I. It's just that I criticized some of the course content, but I did so in a really. I think I was being very respectful. I think I was just being as analytical and professional as I could. And she also attacks me emotionally. She says that it's that I need to go see a therapist, basically. Why don't you talk to your friends and family and maybe see a therapist to work on some of these hard feelings that you're having? Mm-hmm. When it was the design of the course was to have us emote in these journals.
Yeah.
But then she admonishes me for using emotional language. So it's just really interesting. It's this master class in gaslighting, if you read these essays.
Well, indoctrination.
Indoctrination, absolutely. Yeah, and so when you ask what did it make me, how did it make me feel to revisit that, it made me angry.
Yeah.
It stirred that up, made me feel really frustrated and really determined to see this lawsuit through.
So I named this stream after this clever little idea that I had or sentence that I had last night, because we had a meetup at a hotel. Good idea, Leslie, to do it at a hotel. So everybody kind of...
It wasn't my idea. I can't remember who suggested that, but it was
great. There's an atrium, and we just all kind of met and mingled.
Hotel, restaurant. Yeah.
And I don't know how it was for you. It'd be nice to hear your point of view. But for me, being a known quantity, and specifically the known quantity that I am, I had a lot of people like approach me, like with the intention of speaking to me.
Yeah,
and they wanted to share their points of view with me. Mm-hmm. So there wasn't a lot of like discussion. There was just a lot of like, you know, doing the same thing that I do online, but or at least on the YouTube. One guy that I spoke to is finishing up at Antioch, and I asked him, like, what is the, you know, the education to indoctrination ratio? And he's like, yeah, about 40% education, 60% indoctrination. Yeah. But I just kind of go through the motions of it. Mm-hmm. And for one reason or another, I think it's my personality. Just nothing
he's doing
sticks.
All right.
Yeah, nothing sticks to me. People just kind of assume that I'm on the level, you know, but I'm very aware that it's just total batshit insanity.
Mm-hmm.
So it was interesting. There's a lot of, to talk about, but I thought of, you know, socialism, real socialism has never been tried is the phrase.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then I'm in this situation, which I've been in since I started doing YouTubes, where I do these meetups or I meet people in person, and there's this parasocial relationship.
Because they know you.
That gets collapsed in that moment. Mm-hmm. But, you know, for me or whatever my personality, like I don't see anything different between meeting an audience member in person as opposed to interviewing somebody or as opposed to interacting with anybody. It's just, it's all the same kind of interaction in person or online. So I don't really have much of a conscious ego about that. The only thing that I kind of do have is some people like really expect a lot from me, and that doesn't happen that often, but some people like really want to be seen by me. They're longing for being seen, and I'm like, yeah, this is a little bit too much for this particular, you know, meet and greet kind of thing.
Did you feel like that last night?
Not at all. No, this was much more mature set.
Yeah,
and stuff.
That was lovely.
And it's just, it's not, you know, so real parasociality. I was just thinking about that as a riff.
Mm-hmm.
Like we make these relationships with each other virtually. With the parasocial relationship, me is somebody who's a known quantity, Benjamin Boyce, somebody that potentially certain number of people like put on while they're, you know, mowing their lawn. Or
well, they can't hear you if they're mowing their lawn.
There's some really good noise-canceling headphones out there, Leslie.
Okay, maybe so.
You don't know nothing about audio, do you? I got to school you in this stuff.
That's true.
But, you know, or doing dishes or falling asleep, you know, or whatever, and the thing about my content is that my content's mostly about me listening to somebody else. So there's not like a me, like talk about like Benjamin to other person ratio. It's probably around like 10% me, 90% the other person, probably 10 to 20% at this point, because I don't do that many videos except for you. So this helps that out. But, I was just thinking about the relationship, of being somebody who is someone. And
everyone is someone,
and real parasociality, like it's actually the opposite when I think about it, because even you and I, insofar as we know each other, as much as we do know each other, we still kind of have a parasocial relationship. Like I kind of like just see you acting or acting out, as the case may be, and I kind of build this relationship with you in my head, you know, that then collapses when I have feedback. So like we have a high frequency of feedback that keeps that parasocial thing more social, more direct, but
so
we're still like,
it's how much are you interacting with the other person and how much are you interacting with your own projection?
With the model,
what you're expecting. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
What was the last night for you?
It was really nice. In whenever there's a big gathering, I tend to be more focused on trying to make sure everybody seems like they're connecting and not left out.
Is that one of those things from that psychological inventory that we took.
Interesting. It was a social butterfly. Find that in there.
It's not a social butterfly so much as a
extroversion,
like the weaver. You know, but you're like making sure that you're managing everybody else. You're making sure.
Well,
like
I'm not so much managing, but I'm kind of just aware of the people who are on the fringe, and I want to make sure that they get folded in. And so it's kind of hard for me to.
It's like a social croissant. You're just kneading it, folding it, kneading it, and folding it until it gets really crispy and buttery, and then everybody's sauced by 10 o'clock at night because they have really heavy pores.
They did have heavy pores. Yeah. But no, I think it's really nice to see people get out and connect. And I like to connect with people in that kind of way. We did, we talked about this a little bit last night. There were quite a few of us in this area, this geographic area,
that
connected during the COVID lockdowns. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was just like this group of people who were.
Most of your best pajama wear is anti lockdown libertarian and libertarian wear.
There was a t-shirt buying face. I guess support people who have good ideas.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I got some hand-me-downs from some friends who were getting rid of their t-shirts from their t-shirt buying phase. So
without,
I have some of those things.
Without violating confidentiality or anything like that, any like conversations that came up last week?
Oh, gosh, no, I don't know. It was just an opportunity to connect with people. Like I got to meet people that I've met online. I threw out the invitation to our Solid Ground group in our Solid Ground is a peer support online group that I facilitate along with Jennifer Friend and Deborah Knox. And I put the invitation in there. So we had a couple people that are actually local that were able to make it. And it was just really lovely to meet people in person and just to be around friends.
Yeah. Yeah. I met one guy, it was really interesting. Like the work that I've done has gotten me into these different spheres, you know, it was interesting because a lot of people are like, oh, I know you because of Evergreen, you know, everybody brings up the Evergreen thing. And so I'm thinking, well, yeah, I am kind of a one hit wonder. It's either Evergreen or mutilating children. Those are my two domains, right?
Yeah. It's a two hit wonder then.
Yeah. Two hit wonder, you know, for better or worse, you know, I don't really care about that so long as people keep watching me because I need the attention. But no, I was thinking I should probably go back and do another version of go through all the footage and like
clean up
the documentary for like the 7-year anniversary. Like
that's a good idea.
Just clean up all the typos and maybe fix some of the editing and
shorten
stuff.
It. Or do an abridgment? No.
No, probably even add some stuff that
really?
I didn't have in.
Interesting. Yeah. It's so long. I have not watched it all.
No, it needs to be long. Like mine is the complete Evergreen story.
So if you go through, will you watch it with me so that I can actually get through the whole thing as you're deciding?
I mean, you know what would be cool? We could have a watch party.
That would be like how many hours?
It's like 9.5 hours.
So would we do it in installments?
No, we just plunk down and like stream ourselves watching.
For 9 hours?
Yeah, and then have like a big old like party fest. It'd be great.
Really? Is that a thing?
Yeah, you can have a watch party. It's my content. I can do whatever I want.
Oh my gosh, but 9 hours online?
People like Sitch, Adam and Sitch have like 11-hour streams every Sunday.
Oh, I'd need an intermission so that I could go jog around the block or something after sitting in front of a screen for 9 hours.
Maybe, baby. I don't know.
What do you do with a watch party? Do you like have your little, your own little picture-in-picture?
Yeah, I'd probably do that.
Just like the Mystery Science Theater?
Yeah, and then,
commenting on stuff?
Yeah. Maybe have, like, Brett dial in for, like, one point and, like, have, oh, yeah, remember when the student said that to you?
Oh, gosh.
But I was thinking, there's that. And then, like, I've been doing a lot of work listening to or speaking with this dissident right wing kind of collection of individuals that are trying to think of alternative ways of like, you know, connection and being in the world, you know, and even forms of government. Mm-hmm. And so it's just interesting that it's not just liberals or post-liberals, but it is like kind of a diverse set of people. So I get to meet a lot of different people. And I spoke with somebody I'm going to be speaking to on Wednesday, Alexandros Marinos. We had a really good conversation, but
you met him at last night.
Yeah, I've known him, but like he's in the area. So
nice. Did I meet him?
I don't know. You came over and you're should I give people pennies?
No. That was just an idea.
Oh, okay.
Someone asked if we could shuffle around.
Okay.
If we could, because people clumped up.
Yeah.
And started just having their little conversations. And yeah. Someone was asking if we could rotate. So, yeah, yeah. That's when I came over. He was the gentleman that was sitting to your right. And I said hi to him.
Yeah, I did
meet him.
Yeah, we had a conversation about AI and sense making and Sam Harris and stuff like that. And that was another stuff that I was thinking about with the parasocial relationship. I'm gonna on Wednesday I'll speak with him about basically what he thinks of what one of the main problems right now with our sense making apparatus is human beings.
What does that mean? What is a sense making apparatus?
Well, an apparatus is like a tool.
Yeah.
So the sense making would be how you make sense, like the tool.
So does what is that? What do you mean by that?
Well, it's a collection of things that I mean by that. But okay. One of the problems what we have with making sense of the world right now is that we were designed, and wherever we were designed, some workshop that Yacoub kind of cooked up over years, if you think of the black Israel's kind of version of where white people came from. Anyways.
Okay.
we even know about 150 people. And reputation for most of our history has been all about connection, really long-term connection. And when somebody messed up, there was a process of reconciliation, but they lost a lot of trust. And now with our sense-making apparatus, which in this moment I'll talk about the New York Times or CNN or MSNBC, these are apparatuses of making sense of what is happening in the world. And you have these experts, so-called, come on and get a bunch of things wrong. You know, they're really right over here, but then they get a bunch of things wrong, and then there's no accountability. They just go on to the next thing. They just say whatever the regime wants them to say. You saw that with the second Iraq war, weapons of mass destruction. New York Times goes through and says, okay, listen, we were wrong. We trusted these people and we shouldn't have. Then the same people come along and make all these other statements about these other world events. And now the New York Times isn't even saying, oh, we got it wrong anymore with regard to lockdowns, with regard to Russian and collusion and all these different things.
Yeah, the news media as the collective sense-making apparatus.
And so Alexandros was talking about ways in which we could jumpstart or return to reputation-based knowledge, where we trust the expert and we understand that the expert has a certain purview and it doesn't go outside of a certain purview. And if they mess up, then we see them correct themselves. And we have, and it's interesting because if you look at Brett Weinstein and how he has evolved over the last 7 years since he was at Evergreen and the different kind of topics that he gets into and the things that he states and those things that he states get taken out of context or he says things that are wrong and then he goes back and he corrects themselves. Well, he's still criticized for that thing that he said he's wrong and people just completely ignore that that truth is kind of a moving target, especially in developing situations.
People being who?
Random just, haters, you know.
So maybe this is part of the problem. Somebody, who was I just speaking with about this? Oh,
George
I think
Carlin?
It was actually Adam Coleman.
Adam Coleman, yeah.
Because I just spoke with him a couple of days ago, and he had a really good point about people on the internet. Like, he made this, what was his example was like, if you're commenting on somebody's post. And so you comment on, I think the example he gave was Cardi B. Like, you comment something to Cardi B and you say something inflammatory. And then she responds to you. Now you've been elevated. Now you've got someone's attention that gives you sort of a power. You're elevated up in power. And she's given away some of her attention and her power to engage with you when all you were really doing was kind of making a nasty comment, maybe trolling her. And so there's this like degree to which we have to figure out how we engage on these platforms. Like, one of the things that was recently when I was getting a lot of flack from people on Twitter after that Kelly J. Keene post, we talked about that last time we did a deep end. There are some people who have respectful enough discourse that they might be criticizing you, but it's not ugly. It's not hateful. And so I'll engage back with that. If somebody has a criticism, I don't necessarily ignore that. I want to engage with the substance of the criticism. I always want to engage with that. But then there's the others who are just nasty and just saying things that are taking you out of context, really in bad faith, to mock or to belittle or to misrepresent something that you've said in order to make you look bad. And those people, instead of engage, if you engage with them, you've just elevated them to the level of a legitimate critic. You've just said,
depends on how you engage. There's ways
really?
To engage with
I
people.
I think they just don't need your attention at all. It's kind of like a child who's having a tantrum. I mean, there's some degree of just ignore certain things.
And there's some degree of ridicule that kind of like, you know, points out that they're being a fool.
Yeah, but I mean, if their behavior looks foolish, it's already obvious.
I don't know. There's ways of having fun with that. But there's also what you're saying when somebody's making like off-the-wall criticisms. Like taking that seriously is giving it more.
More oxygen than it needs.
But those are kind of smaller social interactions or parasocial interactions. Mm-hmm. But the interaction with the truth, interaction with complex world events, Hamas, Israel, Ukraine, COVID, lockdowns, vaccines, every month, 2 months, like something happens and we all talk about what's happening. And you know what? We were going to talk about tomboys.
Oh, yeah. The girl who's all over Twitter right now.
I've been watching the right, kind of basically the right, really wrestle or like have a lot of fun or like just a lot of dust up over what's attractive, what is an attractive woman. And there's a grift happening there where people say obviously stupid things. Like this one woman said that, one guy said that if you like tomboys, you're gay, you're homosexual. No man should let women work outside. That's a man's job. You know, Pearl Davis said, and this might be, I just saw a screenshot, so this might be the case, but she said, being nice is feminine, you know? It's the constant pull for gender.
Oh, and she's
gender.
The one who's anti-woman. She's the anti-woman.
There's a constant pull for gender discourse. There's a constant, I mean, even if it's negative it's still like this positive desire. People want to know, what is a good woman? What is a good man? What's pretty? What is attractive? What's not attractive? What's a good, what's a good phenotype? What's a bad phenotype? And I don't mean necessarily in race. I just mean like, what is really attractive? What signal does a tomboy send? And there's this, for me, we talked about this before, the video that's been posted around, actually all of her videos now, this girl, this Alabama girl, she's got like a rough and tumbled accent and she's always wearing this little crop top. So you get to see like her nice, like fit form, and she's like, obviously reveling in the attention, and she's got what it takes to get that kind of attention, and then these other people are like,
but she's doing it by engaging in like outdoor work.
Yeah, but she's
so she's like
helping her
pretty
dad
girl,
with stones.
But she's doing hard.
Yeah,
things.
She's
yeah.
A yeah, she's a.
And then there was the woman who had a really big account that I don't follow, but
some influencer
posted a criticism of this girl saying this accent should be illegal. And like she just hated the accent. Yep. She said American women are disgusting. They're so masculine. Why would anybody find this attractive? Yep. Then she was basically putting it down.
Where's
what are you looking
phone?
For? Your phone?
There was a or can you look at my Twitter account? Because there was something. There's just some interesting. I bring that up not only just to talk about it, but this discourse about
this
gender.
One?
Go to mine and then go
this
to my
yours.
Likes.
Okay. Well, I don't know how to find that.
Go. There was something that I did want to read. Where are you? Somebody, Rachel Bovard wrote Alexis de Tocqueville on American women writing in 1835. And Tocqueville is actually, I think it's a very, his work... And that's Tocqueville. Mm-hmm. He came to America. He was a French aristocrat, and he came to America, and he kind of described what's going on in America, and it was a completely different kind of community and society and culture. Yeah, he was describing what he was finding there, and he does a lot of really keen observations. Mm-hmm. And when you listen to problems that Americans have with America right now. Mm-hmm. in the really back distance, there's always this kind of pining for this picture that Tocqueville paints, a very independent and yet very community oriented kind of clusters of human beings all kind of working to better themselves and kind of just loosely federated.
So this is the MAGA idea. This is where it was great.
I think, not just MAGA, but I think a lot of people, when we get down to the solutions, when I talk about when people are like, well, what's going wrong? What is going wrong? Well, what's the solution? It's like smaller communities, connections, and then a return to these American ideals. And what are those American ideals? And one of the things that Alexis de Tocqueville wrote on American women in 1835 was, quote, "She thinks for herself, speaks with freedom, and acts on her own impulse. She is full of reliance on her own strength. It is rare that an American woman at any age displays childish timidity or ignorance. I've been frequently surprised and almost frightened at the singular address and happy boldness of young women in America, as an American woman is always mistress of herself." So it, you know, which is great. One of the comments is like, yeah, he was just trying to get laid, you know, which is like, you got to throw that out there. There may be one thing, but the image of this girl, and I'm sorry to do this, but this girl.
We took a little break for noodling season and to put out boxes.
Yeah.
Now that
so,
it's dried in, we can do it at
but
our own
she kind of excites. Well, she excites like she's attractive for certain reasons and certain dimensions, but she also excites ridicule because she's independent, she's strong, she's outdoorsy, she's fit, you know, she's engaging with life. She's
well,
not
and that's just at a gloss because I don't know. Maybe you've done a deep dive on her content, but I think just what's been posted on Twitter is a couple of different videos of this girl. So you're just seeing like some real basic.
Well, I'm just saying I'm trying to describe the reaction to her and why people would be ridiculing her, and you could hear kind of the leftists say, you know, she's fat shaming me, like this kind of the ridicule that's based really on envy of this independent, strong woman who probably is heterosexual and probably wants to have, you know, like you could just imagine like all of the values that are packed into that accent, right?
The
and you can extract, yeah, all the assumptions that are packed in that accent, like really exacerbate certain amount of envy on the people who want to be living in the pods and are afraid of the white American rural trash.
Right? Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. Well, it seems like most of the comments about her content right now are really positive about her and really hard on the people who've been criticizing her.
Yeah.
There's, in fact, the girl who initially, I guess started all this by posting something and criticizing it, has been pretty thoroughly
soundly rebuked.
She has been rebuked and really criticized for her looks and things like this, which is it just kind of seems like the internet is an ugly place sometimes. And well, it is interesting how these news cycles pop up.
Yeah, I was bringing that up specifically as like a break from Ukraine or Hamas. Like it's a break. Well, where people can really express their really high pitch emotions on something that's so frivolous. And it's fun.
All so frivolous.
It's funny because it tends to be about gender. Sex and gender is just an animating force, the erotic, the libidinal force. It's a part and parcel of what it is to be a human being. It's like one of these energies that we run on. And so it's interesting. I like to see that kind of takes over people's heads and it kind of acts as, you know, kind of like an ice bucket or maybe a hot patch to this other kind of thing when they're being too serious about all these like huge political problems.
Well, I see it as a cultural renegotiation of basic values.
Mores.
Yeah. Because, I mean, if you think about it, at least in the U.S., we are a couple of generations removed from a culture that had a lot, that was steeped in a lot of rigid tradition, like religious tradition and American cultural values, whatever that even is, you know, if you can put a pin in that at some point. But as I think a lot, I mean, your parents were religious, your family was Christian, but a lot of families of our generation would have been like my parents were ex-religious people had grown up with religion that felt oppressive to them and had shrugged it off. And there was, that's a lot of that in that generation, the generation just before us, of people kind of rebelling against their parents.
The boomers.
Yes. And you saw the sexual revolution, you saw all these cultural changes where people felt really free to explore different aspects of their life and what it meant, their social connections with other people. And yet they were exploring it from a position of still being somewhat rooted in the tradition because they were still springing from something. So it's like they're standing on, I would say, the shoulders of someone who's standing on the ground. So you had this, still this backdrop of a fairly stable society in a lot of ways. Not, I mean, this is gloss. This is just an overview. But from there, though, you take a step, another generation down, and now we're standing on the shoulders of the people who were dancing on the shoulders of the last people, and it becomes even more rickety.
Yeah.
And now we're at the point now, a couple of generations out, where kids are negotiating whether they're even a boy or a girl.
Yeah.
And are they non-binary? And there's this massive movement of polyamory happening where the schools are teaching kids that there's not a right way to be in relationship. I mean, it's interesting, like all the slippery slope arguments people made when I was protesting for gay marriage. If you let this happen, then this is going to happen. All those slippery slope arguments of all, here they are, you know, we have all those arguments. And I haven't changed my position on thinking that
gay civil unions.
Yeah. At least, yes. I think that should be absolutely fine. I don't have a problem with that. I never have. In fact, I have always thought that people should be able to choose who they love, but I never saw that going beyond a two-person union. And now we have arguments for that. So it's just incredibly destabilized right now. And I feel like these conversations about gender and sex and what's attractive, what makes a woman attractive, these things are just it's like we've come back to the state of immature approach. We're approaching something and trying to make sense of it rather than having these things be givens.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to read Jenny's getting inking with it. I'm going to have to reload that. But people forget that what they say says more about themselves than the topic on which they speak. Criticisms reveal the things with which they struggle. Mm-hmm. What are you saying about me, Jenny? What are you saying about me? What am I saying about myself?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. Let's see.
I think America was more conservative than our vision of America, the boomers. I think the boomers were more conservative than we give them credit for. But the elite has rapidly shirked any sort of sense of tradition and stability and mm-hmm. long-term rootedness in the past.
Mm. Here, Jenny also says, sounds like the people who are criticizing her are really criticizing themselves by proxy.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. And here, Chaucerian Fraud says, I love women who do not mind getting dirty. Women who are dainty live in a separate world from me. Yeah. That's interesting. It is interesting that these little conversations keep happening. The pearl phenomenon is interesting. I always hesitate to mention these accounts by name because I don't necessarily want to
invoke
give them more attention or even criticize them super directly. There's another one that I'm going to not name.
Oh.
You can if you want, but that's why it's like the one that I follow this account, but I really find the content to be very upsetting. Well, it's transhumanist. It's just this. It has a large following, and the way that the person who says that they're a woman, but I've always suspected it's run by a man.
The account's all about boob jobs and outdoor garages.
No, they one time mentioned
unattached. No, they went on a whole month about versus unattached.
You told me that, otherwise I would have never known that because you had to send me.
Well,
that.
Because like your algorithm just feeds you the boobs.
No,
and not the
I've
garages.
Gone to the page. I don't see this.
Well, they took it down.
All right, so it's all about telling women that they need to get boob jobs because they need to compete with AI, and then they post poll after poll after poll saying which woman is the hottest. And they're just, it's like hotness contests, and they throw in AI people and people who've had plastic surgery. And their argument always is, women, if you really love your man, you'll make yourself better looking. Why aren't you doing enough to make yourself better looking? And this sounds like just, when I say that, it sounds like just a complete troll. And so it's like, why are you even looking at that? Hmm. But the way it's presented is with this veneer of intellectualism.
A lot of long essays. It's interesting ideas. I mean, I don't agree with their conclusions. I'm trying to be neutral.
Yeah.
But it is kind of interesting. It's like, do you want to be titillated all of the time? And they're describing a world where women are constantly titillating.
And that's the only job a woman has. That's the primary job of a woman.
The apex, you know, manifestation of woman's value.
Well, and it just seems like, what is this designed for? This is all the worst things. This is the worst things about social media. This is the way social media has been hurting girls since the supermodels were in magazines. It's the comparing yourself to things.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
And knowing that you can never attain that. So
there is one thing that the count said: men like women with butts shaped like a sideways A.
I know you like that.
And then I'm like, oh, that's why I like Leslie's form so much.
Oh, because it's a sideways A.
You just carry around this egg basket.
Oh, no.
This like rocket egg just kind of walking around.
Don't say this.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. There's one longtime subscriber and supporter of my channel who, he gets a little tetchy when we get a little too personal. And
he's
like, why are you guys, stop sharing, all that stuff.
Yeah.
But again, it's the parasociality thing and, you know.
Well, I'm with him. I tend to be a little more.
Yeah, you're demure.
I don't know.
Modest.
Am I dainty? Would you say like demure. Not a tomboy?
No, you got your little powder room. I got my outhouse.
You have an outhouse?
No.
You know what that is? That's a bathroom outside.
I know what an outhouse is. What do you think I'm wearing this for? It's to hold my toilet paper when I go out.
It's a symbol of outhouses.
Yeah, it's symbol of Range Rover. You know, I'm a keyboard warrior with a lot of lolcows. I gotta go wrangle up.
Yeah.
Board games. It's been kind of busy. We haven't spoke a lot, but there's one board game that I was really excited about and had the boys play with, and we actually played quite a number of games with this. It's called Camel Up.
Oh, yeah, that's actually really
fun. It's a really pretty game.
I like the pieces. It's a nice tactile.
It's a racing betting game, mm-hmm. which is really interesting.
You have it, right?
Yeah, I have it. We should show it.
Grab it. Cool.
But tell, you tell, there's interesting, every game has a different set of mechanics, mm-hmm. and that interacts with the different people that we play with. And there was one guy that I was talking to yesterday who was talking to me about ludic theory, which is about the theory of games. Mm. And there's these different parameters. I'm gonna look at his sources and I'll, you know, kind of do a mini SSC. I'll just think through it. It's just there's different ways that one is engaged in gaming, you know, like exploring.
Hard to pull up.
Well, this particular one is hard to pull up. So
we'll just take the
camera. And then you can show everybody.
Benjamin likes to watch videos of couples reviewing
I have
games
been, now
together.
I've been watching people like review games together, and there's
so
all these different couples
to do it with him.
And there's this one couple where I think she's deaf, so she's always yelling, and there's this other couple where they're Australian but she's from like Indonesia, so she's got an Australian Indonesian accent.
Oh.
And she's like the motor of the couple, you know.
These are the little pieces.
Yeah, show it right up there. Yeah.
Can you see that
little camels?
They're cute. Yeah. They're super cute. They're kind of like these hard rubbery guys.
They're chonky.
I just think they're kind of fun.
They got some chonk going on.
Yeah.
But one thing about this game that I thought was really interesting, I'm bringing it up now, and you don't have to talk to this, but I'm interested in it. You said, I don't like betting.
I don't.
It was really
interesting. It's not fun for me.
It's not fun for you. Could you tell me why? Because I just think that says something about your personality and what kind of games you like.
I just don't enjoy the anxiety of betting. I think it taking risks like that is just not, it's not something I
find enjoyable. Is it a risk or is it a calculation?
Well, it's always a bet is a risk, right? Bet is risk taking.
And so it excites your like security or safety or assuredness?
I just rather make moves where I know that I have some, I don't know, some control over the outcome, and leaving so much to chance.
Okay.
And also, I guess there's this depth of analysis that if you want to really make a good bet, you have to really think through a bunch of different things. And I find that to be a little bit more... Maybe it's tedious. Yeah. Maybe it's intellectual laziness on some to some degree, and also...
You said something about stressing you out a little
bit. Yeah, anxiety. It makes me anxious. Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Julian really likes it. He's really good at this.
Julian's really good at this.
He's good at betting.
He's He's got
I don't know if I like that.
Well, there was one game we were playing, Sheriff of Nottingham, where the game is... Oh, somebody's...
a super chat from Chrissy Meow Mom.
Oh, hey.
Thank you. Share more. I love you guys together. That's so sweet. Thanks, Chrissy, very much.
She's a sweetheart. She's great on Twitter. You guys should follow her on Twitter. What was I going to say?
Something about betting. Gambling. Julian, maybe? I don't know.
Oh, man. I had something in my head to say. It was
really?
There's just a lot of different things. So, Adrian, we're playing a really complex game together. Oh yeah, that's what I was gonna say. So you don't like betting, but what do you think about games where there's chance? Like where there's like dice rolling? Is that
I don't mind that at all.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't mind
so
that.
So random,
I like that.
You're not talking about randomness and indeterminacy.
No, I just when my move is gonna be something that I have to calculate an awful lot and then I'm still leaving a bunch up to chance.
Yeah.
It feels that just feels very stressful to me. I don't enjoy that. I'd rather
it still like the game though.
Yeah, but there are ways to play this without betting very much.
Okay, so you found different strategies where you don't excite your stress. Yeah. So again, that's Camel Up. It's really well done.
Yeah,
it's well done.
And you have another one you want to show me today?
Oh,
that I haven't played.
Oh well, we got to play it first. It's Targi. I'm not going to bring out Targi.
No,
it's a two-player game.
Is it Targi or Targi?
I think it's Targi.
Oh, interesting.
It's interesting. I've only played a few times with the boys.
Okay.
So we'll play it. I'll see if what you like. But, yeah, so I'm playing a very, very time sink. What was it? It takes a lot of time to play this game. It's called Arkham Horror, the living card game. Mm-hmm. And it's very narrative based. And it's a card game where everybody has their own deck and they're playing a character. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of moving parts. I have a few on my gaming channel. Mm-hmm. And I want to do another one. But it takes me about 2 hours to just go through on my own through one of these scenarios. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, Adrian, even though there's a lot of different moving parts and stuff, but they kind of get the story. It's really, I love the games where me and this 10 and 12 year old, like there's an even chance that we're going to win. Mm-hmm. We're going to get really close. Like that says something that this is a really well-designed game where we were playing even Terraforming Mars, which is a really rather complex game. They love it. And Adrian really got into it. And something about the stories and the pictures. Mm-hmm. And he just like, he creates this story in his head and then he has the story. So the game is, all the mechanics are serving the story for him. So he's fine to figure out the mechanics, but if there's that core aspect of a story, then he's into it. Mm-hmm. If it's something really abstract like Azul. It's like, I don't care about this.
He doesn't
this.
Like the cat one either.
Yeah, the Calico. It's like, there's a pattern and stuff. And even though he's doing pretty good with it.
He likes getting the cats to come and sit on his quilt. But,
last time we played Earth, which is another, like probably Earth is probably my favorite game that we've played so far. Mm-hmm. That's a heavy Euro game, but it's rather easy to get into. I think it should be a staple for anybody who's getting into board games. Like to get that, figure out how to play it. And the boys, like dependingly, they can get pretty good at it.
They're really good at it.
You and Julian are basically toe-to-toe at that game. Yeah. But Adrian, all he wants to do in that game is destroy his island. And I wish that the designers knew that so they could build in, like, if you don't want to win the game, there's ways to absolutely...
Like a shoot the moon kind of thing? Like if you destroy it so bad that you actually win?
Yeah, like you crater it. And like, or maybe you crater the whole planet because you create this super toxic thing. So what he did was he had all these event cards and at the end of them, he organized them all. And then he told us all the story and then this happened and then that happened. And it like got progressively worse until this asteroid comes down and blows everything up.
It just wipes it all out. Yeah.
So it's really interesting.
It's a story for him.
To just see the different personalities of all of us, like getting into different parts of the games. And then the way that we, I guess this isn't really parasocial, but this is a social, this is a comment on sociality. I've brought games to our family life as a way to get to know everybody and as a way to have something that's kind of contained mm-hmm. and together, like we have a togetherness mm-hmm. here mm-hmm. and we're using our mind and like we're practicing different skills. Mm-hmm. So there's education aspects of it and stuff, but there's just this quality of, there's so many things that you learn and that you get taught by playing games, like mm-hmm. winning and losing, the different systems, like character, like patience. And actually the opposite of patience was, which is something I'm working on with the boys, like, no, come on, let's get, mm-hmm. let's get going.
Yeah.
Paying attention yeah. and like waiting and then paying attention and keeping mm-hmm. going on. So mm-hmm. I'm just absolutely fascinated by board games right now. Mm-hmm.
In my life. Yeah. That's a good thing. Yeah. And although I think I'm going to have an intervention for you if you keep buying.
I know. I try to just do once a month.
Well, maybe you could get rid of a few.
Yeah, no, I got to get more. I got to get rid of a few that
It's a good problem to have, though, yeah. if you have to be fixed on something. Yeah. I'm glad you do board games and not video games so much. Video games is fine, but like yeah. I have friends whose husbands are really into video games.
There's some really good video games.
I know, but I think that board games are so... They're much more social. I just think they're healthier.
Yeah,
it's a healthier way to play. I don't know. That's a whole conversation in and of itself.
Well, maybe someday. I mean, in June, there's going to be the expansion for the best video game in the history of
video
games.
And then I'm
going
to see that you just become
rude
to the
TV. No. I'm probably going to just send you to Texas for a week so I can just do nothing but play the Elden Ring's expansion because it's so...
And you're going to need me to be like
gorgeously beautiful.
Set so yeah, that you don't have like, to feel the scorn.
No judgment. Like, I'm just going to disappear for about, 120 to 220 hours.
Oh, wow.
And then I'll be done with it. You know, I'll drink my fill of that.
So. That's going to be...
There's something I want to bring up, but you can just kibosh it. Because I was thinking about, like, what are you doing for your hobby? And you spent a lot of time. You had, like, a burst of writing. I was wondering if there's some sort of idea that's mm-hmm. you're incubating that you're, like...
To develop a better habit with it.
Okay.
So still, I do everything in bursts, which is really... I'd love to be more paced and more disciplined with art, especially art and creativity. I'll go through phases where I do a lot of painting, and so I'll be really, really prolific, or a lot of drawing, and I'll put together just a ton of work, and then I won't touch it for years, and then I'll go back to it. Yeah. And so it's that way with me with writing as well. Yeah. I've been wanting to discipline myself to get back into it. I have a few things I want to work on, a few projects.
Is there an idea that's going to be in your bonnet or
a couple of things
in your butt?
I'm not ready to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm just interested. I'm interested. I can't wait to see because you haven't spoken about it. So I'm just wondering if there's something that you're ruminating on that you're digging
into.
We'll see.
We'll see what comes out of this. It's a few things I'm doing. Yeah.
What do you want for dinner?
We
have two choices.
I know. Salmon and rice or...
Saffron rice.
Salmon and saffron rice.
Yeah.
Or... French toast.
Yeah, French toast.
What do you guys think? What would you have?
I want the salmon because I make it good.
Okay. Yeah.
But we can do French toast.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Yeah.
Savory sounds better than sweet.
Well, that's true. I didn't get any whipped cream.
Do you need whipped cream? Seen any good movies lately?
We did see Midsommar.
That was really good.
You like that?
Yeah, I did. It was a little bit horrific, but it was... It was overall good. The story was good enough for me to get through.
Yeah,
like that.
You're not gruesomeness.
No, I hate horror movies.
Body horror.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Faces. You said specifically faces.
Yeah, that was so awful. There were some things that were.
And this
really
movie
bad.
Brought that stuff into you, but somehow it articulated it in this way where you're like, okay, that's okay being over there, like. I don't know. Like,
I don't know
like,
if I would watch it. I might maybe watch it again. It was, now that we're actually talking about it, I'm like, it was really good. We had a lot to talk about afterwards.
Yeah.
There were a lot of really interesting themes that came out of that movie. So it was very, very well done and very, there was a lot of meaning in it. It wasn't gratuitous.
Mm.
But the horror aspects were hard for me to deal with. But not like that movie we saw the other day. What was the one we watched?
Yesterday?
Two days ago.
Dr. Sleep.
Yeah.
You didn't like that one?
No.
I thought that was a really well-made film, but I understand that you don't like it.
It was a Stephen King.
It was a Stephen King-y. There's a couple of like images or like recurring like montages that you really didn't like.
They were like
grotesque.
Yeah, yeah. I can't even say.
Yeah. You just don't like that. Yeah.
No.
I just thought I was really surprised by how well done that movie was. Cinematography wise, the sound
well acted pretty.
Set and the story is really tight and it's kind of really dreamlike and there's this really magical thing to it. So I can just like discount the gruesomeness in a way that you're not keyed in to gruesome.
Yeah, I can't handle it horror. Yeah. But you kind of like a little of that.
And then we watched Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Yeah.
We hadn't seen it in a long time.
That's really good. I haven't seen it since it came out. I saw it at the theater.
Yeah.
In what year was that?
I think it was 2001. I think it was 2001. I'm pretty sure it was 2001.
Yeah.
Maybe 2002. But that's like a good 20 years old.
Yeah.
It was very, very romantic. I forgot.
It's beautiful. It was so sad.
Yeah.
It's so pretty.
Yeah. Films.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for everybody for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much for being here.
And was there any questions? Midsommar is very funny, right? Someone wants us to eat salmon sandwiches with French toast.
Oh, interesting. I see Miroir Jumeau says,
why not both?
Calm on Ground says, do the salmon.
Miroir Jumeau.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, we'll have to read through all of these. Well, that's an interesting word. What's that in reference to?
Retardy.
Oh, something with the camels?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Retardy.
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 Yeah,
retardy.
Thank you guys for joining us. These are fun.
Yeah, these are fun. Thanks for having us do this.
Of course.
I was feeling lazy. Now I feel good.
I said, it's every other week. Why not just keep
it going? It's fun to talk. So thank you for giving me the opportunity.
I like
to speak.
You talking.
I have a lot of content coming up. I'm so backed out. I have so many interviews coming up. So stay tuned to the channel.
Awesome.
Do you have anything, any guests that you want to plug on your channel, the Radical Center?
I think tomorrow we have Nina Paley joining us. For Solid Ground live stream.
Oh, for your live stream. Yeah. That's at 10 a.m. Pacific time.
Yep.
Tomorrow morning, Monday morning. Oh, and don't forget, guys, time change. So get ready for like a wonky morning.
Now tomorrow. That phones change for us, it's so much easier.
Well, yeah. And then I went inside. I'm like, oh, I have another hour. And then I'm like, no, I don't.
Yeah. You get fooled.
Yeah. Now it's nice and dark early.
Oh, and I talked to Adam Coleman, and I'm going to put that out this week.
Okay.
I'm going to ask you to edit because we had a little glitch in the internet, so if you can edit that piece.
Yeah, I know.
I'll pop that up, but I really enjoyed talking with him.
Yeah, he's a really nice guy. Yeah. He's a nice fellow.
Yeah, really great.
So, Radical Center, Benjamin A. Boyce, you guys have a good night. Peace out.
All right, good night.